All right. Hello and welcome to the seventh and final call of the Body Love Revolutionaries Telesummit. As always, I'm really thrilled to have you on the call. Some of you may know me already and some of you may not. My name is Golda Paretsky and I'm the founder of Body Love Wellness, and I'm a certified holistic health counselor who specializes in helping people heal from food and body image issues. As I mentioned on each of these calls, each of our interviewees is doing something really big to heal the world by changing the way we feel about and interact with our bodies, whether it's via art, activism, or like tonight's guest, real research on how to be healthy no matter what your size. Tonight you're also joined by over 400 other amazing revolutionaries, and as I've been saying each time we get together, whether you consider yourself a fat activist or you're just beginning to learn about health at every size, the fact that you're here tonight is a revolutionary act. And so I invite you to really join into this call, body, mind, and spirit. And as questions arise for you, feel free to write them down so that you'll have them handy to ask our guest toward the end of the session. So now, without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Linda Bacon. Most of us are taught to believe that being fat is unhealthy and losing weight will extend our lives. But acclaimed research scientist and author Linda Bacon shows that a focus on weight backfires, and the best way to deal with health concerns is to end the quest for thinness, focus on good health habits, and let your weight naturally settle. Bacon backs her claims on solid research. She earned her doctorate in physiology, specializing in weight regulation from the University of California, Davis. She also holds graduate degrees in psychology, specializing in eating disorders and body image, and kinesiology, specializing in exercise metabolism, and has professional experience as a professor, researcher, psychotherapist, exercise physiologist, and consultant. She's currently a nutrition professor in the biology department at City College of San Francisco and serves as an associate nutritionist at the University of California, Davis. Linda also has an active private consulting practice advising healthcare professionals and institutions on strategies for implementing health at every size. She is cited regularly in print, radio, and television media. Considered to be a leading expert on weight regulation, Linda has published her groundbreaking research in top scientific journals, and as many of you know, her book, Health at Every Size, The Surprising Truth About Your Weight, has received great acclaim, and it is in its second printing. She is also a popular and compelling public speaker, which I can attest to. So without further ado, I'm going to unmute Linda. And so Linda, thanks for being on as part of the Body Love Revolutionaries Telesummit.
Sure, Golda. I'm honored to be here. I can see that you've been doing some amazing stuff lately, and it's really exciting to be able to share in that.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I'm just thrilled to be talking with you. I'm like more nervous to talk to you than anybody, even though I've met you before. I feel like we have so much to talk about, and I'm just thrilled to have you. So I'd love to get started. You know, I just want to know, what was your journey with your weight, and how did that influence your decision to study weight regulation?
Right. Well, I think you already know part of the answer to that, that one of the main reasons why I study weight regulation is clearly because it's very intricately related to my own personal struggle. I suppose if I want to date this back, I would have to really go all the way back to my preteen years. At that time, I was quite a tomboy, and I didn't quite know how to relate to having a girl's body. I also had fairly low self-esteem at the time, and so when I was trying to figure out who I wanted to be, how I wanted to get attention, really all I did was latch on to all these cultural ideas of what kids are supposed to be like. So it was really easy for me to look at all of those ideal images out there of girls' bodies and think, wow, if only I achieved that, then everyone would like me and accept me, and it would get me popularity and respect from my parents and teachers and friends. And my struggle began at that point. I started restricting food, which, of course, rebounded into binging, and then I would cycle back and forth between the two. And so I certainly know firsthand how painful it is to wake up every morning, to weigh myself, to translate the number into feeling ugly and worthless and like a failure. And I really so empathize with people that are stuck in their body hatred and fears around foods, because it's just so visceral to me, you know, that those memories have stuck with me, and they're painful for me to bring up. And for me, when I was trying to heal from this, when I realized how painful it was, academics were really an intricate part of the whole journey to making peace for myself. So I started studying weight regulation to try to figure out how I can get the body that I wanted. And I remember first when I was studying this just on an undergraduate level, what became really clear to me were the cultural issues, and that helped me to see that this wasn't just my personal problem, that most people were really suffering from it, and that it was built into our culture. But nonetheless, knowing that wasn't enough for me to give up my own personal struggle. You know, I still had to deal with it. And at that point, it was very much of a woman's issue. I think things have changed since then, and men are equally, or maybe in slightly different ways, dealing with their own struggles of being in their bodies. But after I got my undergraduate degree, I went to study it from the perspective of psychology, as you mentioned, and I got a master's degree. And I was absolutely blown away by what I learned. Stuff that seems so basic to me now was groundbreaking at the time. The idea that dieting's not a healthy way to approach food, but it instead teaches us to distrust ourselves, or recognizing that I turned to food for comfort, but that it was possible to learn better skills to take care of myself and sit with difficult feelings. Other things that I was confronting was the idea that body hatred just undermined my drive to want to treat myself well and take care of myself, and that I would be better served by learning to accept the body that was maligned first, and then I could move on to taking better care of it. Previously, I thought that hatred was a good thing, that it might motivate me to make better changes. And anyway, those insights that I had studying psychology were really transformative to me, and really helped me to get out of this cycle that I'd been in and learn how to better take care of myself. And because those insights were so transformative for me, it inspired me to want to pass that information on to others. And then when I continued in my academics, I was surprised to see that in every field, I learned more that supported that old paradigm that I learned from psychology. So when I was studying exercise science, for example, I learned that while it's true that being regularly active has incredible benefits for health and well-being, that it also fails as a weight loss technique. You know, there was that same disconnect. Just like dieting doesn't work, exercise doesn't work to help us to get thin either. But it was really when I did my PhD that everything came together for me, that I realized that this entire model of how we look at weight is just flawed, that weight's role in health is blown out of proportion. And I also got an opportunity when I was doing my PhD to put all of this information to the test, where I actually designed a randomized controlled trial where I looked at what happens when you start to support people in learning how to appreciate their bodies more. Do they take better care of them? And I compared it to dieting. And the results I got confirmed everything that I'd learned through my education, that it was just phenomenal, that people really dramatically improved in their health, their well-being. They liked themselves better at the end of the Health at Every Size program. And it was such a sharp contrast to the diet group, which just confirmed everything we also know about that, that sure, there's initial weight loss and health improvement, but when you start to follow people over time, they regain all the weight, they feel horrible about themselves, and they lose all the health improvements. And it was just so inspiring to me, and so I was able to turn the whole intervention, you know, everything that we had done to help support people in adopting CASE into a book and to also document all the science that supports it. And that evolved into the book that I published called Health at Every Size, The Surprising Truth About Our Weight. And it's been pretty exciting for me to have an opportunity to just get this information out into the public and to just see how transformative it can be for so many people.
It is, you know, truly amazing information, and it so goes against the grain of what is instilled in most of us, that you know, that diets work if you do them correctly, that pain and dislike of your body is a motivator, that you know, exercise is, you know, has an effect on weight loss and is going to be the key to you losing weight, and that weight loss is even a good thing to focus on. And so what you're saying, so much goes against what so many people have learned from so many avenues too. I mean, we have the diet industry, we have, you know, what you learn in health class, you have even, you know, government initiatives that are funded by lobbying groups. You have so many, from so many places, we're getting the opposite information. So I often wonder, how do you, well, first of all, what kind of response do you get, generally speaking, from people who either read your book or, you know, I know you're giving talks all over the place, you're on the radio and media, you know, how are people responding to this information?
Okay, well, there's the majority response and the minority response, and they are polar opposites of one another. The majority response is absolutely phenomenal. That when I talk to the general public, for example, it just confirms people's experience. You know, they've been feeling lousy about their bodies, and they know that that's just not helpful. And it just makes so much sense to them to just start from a place of self-love and appreciation and moving on from there, rather than buying into what everyone else is telling them, that their bodies have failed them, that there's something wrong with them, that they're bad, that they need to restrict and control themselves. You know, all of those messages have just been so painful. So there's a real, real sense of relief that I'm feeling in audiences, that they're okay, you know, that there's instead something wrong with a culture that's been feeding them misinformation. And that is just really exciting, to just kind of connect with my audiences emotionally. And that's really been the majority response. And I also get that response when I speak to healthcare professionals, because healthcare professionals, too, are feeling really frustrated. They've been giving the weight loss messages for so long, and they recognize that that's not helping to change their patients, that patients are still feeling desperation around their weight, and they're not seeing improved health outcomes from it. So I think that healthcare practitioners are also feeling somewhat open-minded and some relief when they recognize that there is another solution out there, that they just need to change their messaging, and that they can be, that there are other things that they can, ways to work with their patients that's going to be much more successful. So overall, I'd have to sum it up by saying that there is an incredible relief that I'm feeling. Now, coupled with that is also a lot of anger against the culture that's been lying to them for so long. And I want to contrast that with the minority experience that I get. There's also some resistance to this message. And that makes sense, too, because, again, these ideas are so well established in our culture. It makes sense to be distrustful of them when you have just a small minority of people that are saying, hey, there's something wrong with this. But what I find is that the people that are resistant are the people that are unwilling to actually look at the data. They're basically just clinging to assumptions and to the fact that, well, so many people believe this, it must be true. And when I actually can get people to look at the data and to look at why we might have come up with the old conclusions, and how we can look at the same data and interpret them without those old assumptions and come up with something very, very different. So I would say that the resistance that I'm feeling is mostly just a resistance to challenging assumptions and really grappling with the hard issues. And also we need to recognize that it's very threatening to people. there are a lot of people whose entire careers are predicated on being able to sell this weight loss message. And it's really hard for them to envision that they could get clients and respect if they had a different message that's out there. There's not much in the culture that's going to support them to being open to the new paradigm. So it can be very, very threatening. So I certainly understand why the resistance would be there. But again, what I'm finding is that's really the minority reception that I've gotten, that mostly there's a real sense of relief to hear this new message.
That's great to hear. That's great to hear. And it's great, you know, that you're able to sort of connect the data with people's experience, too, that it's sort of, you know, when you hear about health at every size and you're in a place that you can take it in, it can be very affirming because so many people, their experience is, you know, for example, with dieting, a lot of stress and maybe initial weight loss and then it comes back on and then, you know, this constant sort of battle. And to hear that, you know, it's not you didn't fail, and that there are other ways to go about it and other ways to be healthy, it can be very affirming. So I'm glad to hear that the majority of people seem open to what you're talking about. You know, let's talk a bit more about these sort of myths about dieting. You know, one being that it works, that it's healthy. How do you think, if you could just talk a little bit about how it sort of gets sustained in our culture, despite the fact that for many people they have the opposite experience? You know, how do these diet myths sort of continue on and on?
Right. Well, I think to answer that question, it's important to step back from dieting to look at what it's like to be fat in this culture. It is really, really difficult to be fat in this culture. There is so much discrimination, stigmatization, stereotyping about what people did to achieve being fat. It's no wonder that people want to opt out, given how they're treated in this world. And it's really hard for people to conceive of loving a larger body, given this very real discrimination and stigmatization that exists. There are a lot of cultural benefits to living in a thinner body, not the least of which is the approval that you get from other people. And I think that when people see how much fat is maligned, it seems so much easier to opt out of being fat, i.e. to lose weight, than to figure out how to live happily in their fatter body. So I think that all of those conventional ideas about weight that you can, you know, the idea that you can just be thinner if only you diet hard enough, it's really easy to cling to because it kind of removes the whole need for resistance for the paradigm because you've got this easy answer. All you have to do is change yourself, and all the fat hatred that you've experienced just isn't going to be an issue anymore. And with all the misinformation we have about weight, you know, that whole idea that anyone can lose weight if they just try hard enough, it's just a setup for conflict. So it's easy, given how culturally accepted it is, that we buy into it. And then it's easy to believe that, therefore, it's our own personal failing when it doesn't work for us, instead of blaming the idea of dieting. Because, again, everybody believes in it so strongly. So if it's true, then it must be me that's the problem, not the idea. Mm-hmm. And I think another really important aspect of this is the hope that we get from this belief system. Because if we accept the idea that weight loss is achievable, if only we just diet right, then we can believe that we can make our lives dramatically different just through weight loss. And that gives us a lot of hope in the world. And then there's fantasy that gets built on the hope. Thinness isn't just about a body size. It's about giving us power in the world, the power to be attractive to others, the power to be accepted, respected. So it becomes much, much bigger than just the quest to lose weight. This is really a quest to get our personhood back. And I think that once we understand how much gets riding is riding on all of these weight loss fantasies, then we can really understand the stumbling blocks. So I guess what I've come to understand through studying this is that a really critical aspect of the journey we all need to go on is to reconnect with the hope that we can have hope for a different world, that the key is to figure out what it is that we hope for through weight loss. So when we have these weight loss fantasies, what is it that we think it's going to get for us? And rather than trying to go at it through weight loss then, the secret becomes to try to go at it directly and recognize that there are a lot of ways to achieve what we want that are probably going to be much more easy to achieve than trying to go at it backdoor through getting thin and then getting acceptance. So
yes,
I think that that's the key, is ask yourself, what is it I want out of thinness? Is it that I want to feel attractive in the world? Is it that I want better health? And think about what your goals are. And then you can start to envision how you can actually get what you want. So you can get hope then. And what you find is that, first off, it's much more achievable to go at that stuff directly. And it's also interesting to note that when people get those things through weight loss, it becomes a very hollow feeling. Like, it may be true that if you get thinner, you're going to get more attention from other people sexually. Unfortunately, that's, you know, part of how sick our culture is. But on the other hand, when you get that attention, you don't feel legitimately seen. So your relationships start to feel quite hollow. So yeah, you might get that sense of being attractive in the world, but it doesn't give you the happiness that you were hoping it would actually give you. But on the other hand, if you work towards being attractive to yourself in other ways, and when other people start to see you and notice your attractiveness, then you feel much more legitimately seen, and it feels real.
Absolutely. I think also when you lose weight and it can feel like I finally lost the weight, but there's still a part of you that's worried that you're going to put it back on, which is like this other stress. And if it's if your feeling of attractiveness is so contingent on that size, you sort of live in fear that you're going to get bigger again and not be attractive. You know what I mean? Instead of
exactly
feeling, yeah. So I think you're so right on that. You know, that sort of this myth of the fantasy of thinness is so connected to really what we desire. And then why don't we just go for what we desire? You know, and bring that. Make the effort to have that happen. So to talk a little bit more about myths in terms of weight loss, size, et cetera, a lot of people will talk about thinness not as, oh, it's not because you're more attractive or not because that's what we want for you. It's because of your health. You know, we're worried about your health, and this idea that if you're thinner, you have less of a chance of having heart disease or diabetes or even cancer. That sort of fat is blamed for a lot of those things, even when there's not so much evidence of causation as we might have been led to think. So I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, about fat as considered to be a cause of disease, and where we might be wrong on that for people. Yeah.
Sure, Golda. I think, again, you're identifying a really, really critical area here, because this is the place where a lot of people go wrong in their reasoning. Now, one thing that's true is that we can certainly see a correlation between a lot of different diseases and being fatter. There's no doubt about that there's a number of diseases that are much more common among heavier people. And I think if you buy into the cultural idea that fat is the cause of it, or if you believe that fat is bad, it's really easy to see this correlation, you know, that diseases are more common in fatter people and to blame it on the fat itself. And that's what we usually do in scientific research, is we come in with this assumption and the correlation just proves what we believe. But when you actually try to be a good scientist and you drop your assumptions, what you start to see is that there's a lot that doesn't make sense in this picture. That when we blame obesity for heart disease, it's a lot like blaming yellow teeth for cancer, for lung cancer. Instead, we can consider the possibility that smoking might play a role in both. And, you know, telling people they need to lose weight, well, you know, that's a lot like telling someone with pneumonia to stop coughing so much. It may not be possible. It's not going to make the disease go away. There's other ways of looking at this issue, and the point you brought up about confusing correlation with causation is really, really critical. So I think to understand it, it's really easy if we take this out of the realm of weight and just look at another example. One thing that's really clear in the research is that bald men have a much higher incidence of cardiovascular disease than men with hair, and that's been shown in many research studies. And it would be easy to look at that and say, wow, you know, does baldness cause cardiovascular disease? Is there something about hair that's going to protect us against cardiovascular disease? But interestingly enough, scientists never go there. So even though the correlation is there, they don't assume causation. And that's a good thing, because when they do further